Putnam Berkeley Audio presents Retreat Hell by W.E.B. Griffin, read by James Naughton. Until August 1945, when General Order No. 1, the protocol for the surrender and occupation of Japan, was being somewhat hastily drafted in Washington, the 38th parallel, which runs across the Korean Peninsula, had been just one line on a map of the globe. At the time, World War II was just about over. Nagasaki and Hiroshima had been obliterated by atomic bombs, and Japan was willing to surrender. The Soviet Union had just, somewhat belatedly, declared war on the Japanese Empire, and had already started to move troops into the Japanese protectorates of Manchuria and Korea. President Truman, who had already learned not to trust the Soviet Union, realized that to keep the Red Army from occupying all of Korea, a demarcation line between the northern part of the Korean Peninsula and the southern, where the United States planned to station troops, was needed. If Korea was divided about equally at the 38th parallel, the United States would control Seoul, the capital, and the major ports of Incheon near Seoul and Pusan at the southern tip of the peninsula. The Soviets raised no objections. The seeds for what became the People's Democratic Republic of North Korea and the Republic of South Korea were sown. 4 years and 11 months later, the Inmungun, the Soviet-trained North Korean army, invaded South Korea across the 38th parallel with the announced intention of unifying Korea. The attack came as a complete surprise to the United States. United States intelligence agencies at all levels had failed to perform their basic duty to warn of an impending attack on the United States or its allies. It was hard then, and still is, more than a half century later, to understand why we didn't see the attack coming. Many historians now believe that the reason Stalin authorized his surrogate North Korean army to invade South Korea is because the United States had actually led him to believe we would raise no objections. On 12 January 1950, Secretary of State Dean Acheson outlined President Truman's Asian policy in a speech at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Acheson drew a line of countries the United States considered essential to its national interests, a euphemism everyone understood to mean the United States would go to war to defend. Acheson placed Japan, Okinawa, and the Philippines within the American defense perimeter. Taiwan and Korea were not mentioned. The United States was then completely surprised, 5 months later, when, in the early morning of 25 June 1950, the North Koreans invaded across the 38th parallel. Not that 24 hours or 10 days or 6 months advance warning of the attack would have been of much real use. The Inmungun was well-trained, well-disciplined, and well-armed. The South Korean armed forces were not. There were only several hundred American troops in South Korea on that Sunday morning, assigned to the Korean Military Advisory Group, KMAG, and they were armed only with their individual weapons. The 8th United States Army was scattered among the islands of Japan, but it was not prepared to fight a war. Blame can fairly be laid for this. The President of the United States, under the Constitution, is Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. With that authority comes the responsibility, the duty of the President, to ensure that the armed forces are prepared to wage war. In practical terms, this means the President ensures that the uniformed officers in command of the armed forces keep their forces in readiness. There is little question now that the senior American officer in the Pacific, General of the Army Douglas MacArthur, failed in his duty to make sure that the 8th Army was both trained and equipped to go to war. On 25 June 1950, it was neither. That it was not adequately trained is entirely MacArthur's fault. But the blame for the inadequate equipment has to be laid on the desk of President Harry S. Truman, right beside the small sign reading, "The Buck Stops Here," that he kept there. There were, of course, extenuating circumstances. Congress, for one, was not in the mood to appropriate the billions of dollars it would have cost to bring the armed forces back to the state of preparedness they had been in 5 years before, when, on 2 September 1945, MacArthur had accepted the unconditional surrender of the Japanese Empire. And Korea was almost at the bottom of the list of problems with which President Truman had to deal on a daily basis. Most of these problems had to do with thwarting Soviet mischief in Europe, the Near East, and even Africa. The Soviets hadn't done nearly so well in the Far East, and the credit for that unquestionably belongs to Douglas MacArthur, who had refused to permit the Soviets to participate in the occupation of Japan. Because of the international dateline, when it is Sunday in Korea, it is Saturday in New York City in Washington. The first word of the attack reached the Pentagon about 8 o'clock Saturday night, and at about the same time, the United Nations Commission in Korea managed to get UN Secretary General Chukwu Lee on the telephone at his estate on Long Island. Lee blurted, "This is war against the United Nations." President Truman learned of the attack at his home in Independence, Missouri, early Sunday morning, and immediately boarded his airplane, the Independence, to fly back to Washington. Lee convened an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. The Soviet Union, trying to force the UN into ceding Red China and expelling Chiang Kai-shek's Chinese nationalists, was refusing to attend Security Council meetings and did not participate. This was a blunder on their part. Had they attended, the Soviet Union could have vetoed the resolution that stated that the attack constituted a breach of the peace, ordered the immediate withdrawal of North Korean forces from South Korea, and called upon all UN members to render every assistance to the UN in the execution of this resolution. At about 6 o'clock that evening, in Washington, in Blair House, across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House, which was being repaired, President Truman met with the more important members of his staff. A little after 10:30 Sunday evening, two teletype orders from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff were sent to the Far East. The first, to MacArthur, the commanding general, Far East Command, FECOM, authorized him to send ammunition and military equipment to Korea to prevent the loss of Seoul, authorized him to provide ships and aircraft to evacuate American citizens from Korea, and directed him to send a survey party to Korea to see what was going on. It is germane to note that until MacArthur got that order, he had no official role in Korea. The former Japanese Protectorate of Korea, now the Republic of South Korea, was an independent nation. The second order went to the United States 7th Fleet. It was to immediately sail for the U.S. Navy base at Sasebo, Japan. On arrival, the warships would come under the operational control of the commander, U.S. Naval Forces Far East. Since Commander Naval Forces Far East was under FECOM, that meant they would be under MacArthur's command. Outnumbered, outgunned, and in many cases poorly led, most of the South Korean army simply began to disintegrate in the face of the North Korean attack. By the 28th of June, Seoul was in the hands of the enemy. MacArthur radioed the Pentagon that U.S. ground troops were going to be necessary if the United States intended to push the North Koreans back across the 38th parallel. While this was going on, the United Nations, realizing that the North Koreans had no intention of obeying the UN resolution to get out of South Korea, issued another one. Recommends that the members of the UN furnish such assistance to the Republic of Korea as may be necessary to repel the armed attack. Resisting the communist attack would be an action of the United Nations rather than a unilateral action by the United States. On 30 June, President Truman got MacArthur's assessment of the Korean situation and his request for American ground troops. Truman authorized the deployment of one regimental combat team and the deployment of two infantry divisions. But more troops were going to be needed, and quickly. The problem was, there were no more troops. The Marine Corps was ordered to furnish a division. There were two Marine divisions. The first, in California, was at less than half wartime strength, and the second, on the East Coast, was in even worse shape. There was no way the Corps could meet the requirements laid on it by the Commander-in-Chief, except by mobilizing the entire reserve. This was done. The Eighth Army, under General Walton H. "Johnny" Walker, who had served with distinction under Patton in Europe, began a series of delaying actions, in other words, retreated down the Korean peninsula. On 4 August, the Pusan perimeter was established. This was a small enclave at the tip of the peninsula.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?